Michael, will you do the honors, perhaps? Let's see.
Sure. It's my pleasure to introduce Scott R. And Scott, take it away.
All right, let's rumble. Before I begin, I do want to take a little bit of a silent moment for two reasons. The first reason is for that person who's out there who's still suffering, who hasn't yet found a seat in this room, and they will always be welcome in the room. The other thing I want to have some silence for is to make room for the gods to come in, and that any words that will come out of my mouth will be of use to all of you. Because I already know what I think. I want you, though, to get words that will help you. So we'll just be silent for a few seconds here. It's great to see all of you. It's been a while since I've seen you. I love this meeting in particular. I've been in Al-Anon for 8 years, and this wasn't the first meeting I attended, but it was the first meeting where I really felt like I could plant and be there. I came into this meeting. It was so interesting. I came into the meeting and I was a little taken aback at first because everybody knew each other and hugging. It's like, oh, okay, all these guys know each other. Great. That's fucking exactly what I want. Clapping for every goddamn thing, and guys being real super friendly to me. I didn't know. One of the friends, I don't think he's here tonight, but a great fellow. Hey man, how are you? Good to see you. And I was like, hey, back down. I don't want to wake up pregnant over here. So just slow up, slow up. And at first it was like, I don't know. I don't know. But I kept coming because it didn't take me long to see that that was true care that people were showing for each other, which is something I did not trust at that time. Particularly amongst men, because any sort of care I knew from men in my early life was connected to other difficulties. So, it took me a little while to warm up to it, but it was a great, great beginning for me in the program to be attending this meeting regularly. And I met both of my sponsors. I met my first sponsor here, there he is. And then I met my second sponsor, who is also here, and I'm very delighted to know both of those guys. They both helped me out, immeasurably. So, again, so I was here. I came in here 8 years ago, and I came in here with the feelings of suicide, homicide, more suicide than homicide. I was in a relationship with a woman that I loved so deeply, and yet we couldn't stop fighting. We fought every couple of weeks for about 7 years. And I just didn't know what to do with myself, I was in a position in that relationship that I said I would never be in. I said, oh, I'll never be in a thing where I'm not talking to the person or we're not having sex or we're just walking around each other in the house. And that's exactly where I was. And it was so discouraging to me because I felt like I had done everything that I knew how to do to be in that relationship, but also be in the relationship of my own life. And it wasn't going well. So I came to the meetings, and fortunately for me at the beginning, people have often said they come to the meetings looking to get, looking how to get the alcoholic to stop drinking. I didn't do that. I've done a lot of spiritual seeking in life. So by the time I got here, I knew that it was me. I knew it was on me. I wasn't trying to fix her or anybody. I just knew that I was out of ideas. All my good ideas led me here. So thinking about this lead, of course, being an Al-Anon, my idea was that, oh, I'll write it, I'll workshop it, I'll, rewrite it, I'll rehearse it. It's like, not going to do that. But I do try to think about like a theme of a thing. When I do my step work, I try to sort of sum it up. But when I finish the step, I try to sum it up in the one thing I gain from working the step. So thinking about tonight's talk, I was thinking about, well, what is the thing that has been really coming forth lately. And the word that keeps coming back is the word trust. That's been coming up a lot in meetings and dialogue with people, fellows and non-fellows. And I want to just bring that in as kind of a word that I'll be, you know, coming back to throughout tonight's talk. So like many of us, I grew up in amongst alcoholism with a parent and also with relatives. My grandfather died from liver poisoning. I had an uncle on the other side of the family who drowned in his own vomit while he was drunk. And, you know, there was a some scary kind of alcoholism, the kind of alcoholism that for me, there's a kind where I still, if I experience this, I still have a reaction to it. And it's that kind where if I come up to a person, if I can come up behind a person or near a person, and I can smell the alcohol coming out through the sweat, and then there's like fresh alcohol on the breath, that's a thing that still makes my spine go, you know, shot up there for a bit. And so there was that, there was plenty of that growing up. And the thing that was really common was just not knowing what was going to be next, not knowing what was going to happen from one day to the next. You know, am I going to be in favor today or not? Or will I be punished for something that I'm not clear about or not? That inconsistency was something that was consistent growing up. And it's amazing how that inconsistency flavored the rest of my life, because I've always been a guy, when people say, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I'm like, 5 years? What are you kidding, man? I'm just living for today. But I realized that a big part of that is the unwillingness to make plans because of being afraid that they will just go to hell no matter what, and not trusting that I will be able to have a plan come to fruition or that I'll be able to get help in the plan. And my sponsor has said, it's really great. This is a fairly recent thing. This might be within the last few years. He said, you know, Scott, you can start making plans. You can do that. You know, you have abilities, you have people you can go to, you have friends, and things can work out. So might think about it. It's like, so I'm glad to be making plans. What else can I talk? See, I took a few notes. I didn't write a speech, but I did take a few notes. Where are we? A good one. One of the most difficult parts of growing up in an Al-Anon, being an Al-Anon person, is I developed a great ability to normalize circumstances. So all these things I was doing, you know, manipulating, trying to get people to like me, trying to get people to go away from me, whatever that was, those were normal things to me. So, you know, throughout the course of my recovery, to be able to see ways in which those things are not normal for, let's say, healthy behavior, certainly the kind of behavior that I want to have for my life, it's amazing how I just normalized so much of that kind of thing. You know, one of my great difficulties that I've had being an Al-Anon person is the lie by omission. This business of saying I'm okay when I'm not, saying I don't need anything when I do, saying I'm not mad when I'm mad, all of these things just because of not wanting to, not thinking I could get my needs met, not even wanting to, because there was no use in even trying. Another part of that is the notion that, not even the notion, the practice, that if I do say it, I've got to be ready to fight to the fucking death to get it. And I'm not exactly sure where that came from, because my parents weren't excessive. I mean, I won't say they weren't. They did hit spank us and, you know, smack us a bit, but not like a ton. So I'm not quite sure where all that came from, but I do have that component where I feel like if I have to ask for anything, I got to be gunned up and ready to destroy if there's any kind of static that comes out of it. So not a great trait to have when you're trying to get your needs met. What else? Lordy, 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 lordy. Yeah, I guess that we're reading this book. I'm doing a meeting right now. We're reading this book, the Intimacy and Alcoholic Relationships book. And it's really stunning. It's a great book. And one of the things, this just came up the other night, and I do want to share it because it really hit me when we read it. It says, I desire to allow someone to see who I really am while trusting that I will be accepted and supported. I desire to be in a relationship where I feel safe to be naked, literally and figuratively, and still be accepted in spite of the imperfections I reveal. The trust aspect, coming back to that, I think about when being in relationships, and like I mentioned earlier, the relationship I was in when I came here, and how I chose a person with whom I could not reveal myself. I chose this person, the person who I could not show those parts to. So that's a my part thing, man. And that's one of those things where I would do things, I just was not aware of what I was doing. I just didn't have any idea of what I was doing. And yet I chose it. I created it. And one of the great notions that's been coming forth for me recently is the business about being accountable to your part. You know, there was a reading in a meeting on Sunday. It was November 9th from Hope for Today. And there was just a little passage in there about not needing to harbor resentments and being able just to be responsible for my part. And for some reason, it's the reason to the word, but for some reason, it just hit me, just went straight through me, the notion of being responsible for my part and how that is becoming so much more easy to do. Because I have learned that having my part does not mean my fault. And that's something I did not understand for the entirety of my life. And now I do understand it. My part is not my fault. So if I can approach it like that, it's really easy for me to go, hey, yeah, I did that. I did it. I did that thing. And because I realize now that it was the judgment I was attaching to my part about me being a bad person or me being X, Y, or Z that would keep me from really just getting into what my part is, still keeping out parts because I'm defending it. I'm having to defend it. I don't have to defend it. I don't have to defend it. But that sounds simple, but I find it miraculous, frankly, that I can just increase my ability to have my part. It's like I was talking to another friend about this recently, and it feels like these days it's more about, it's like every week there's more fog lifted, and it's weekly that it's happening. One of the fellows here, he's here tonight, I'm glad to say, he's spoken about the fog machine and about how getting into stuff and then the fog machine comes on. It's like, I don't know what's going on, man, but it's like the fog, no machine, and whatever fog is there is just going, it's just going away, which I find really, really stunning, you know. Back to the state of being, when I first came in, and even my early years in the program, you know, people talk about being suicidal or homicidal. For me, it wasn't really suicide. I've never really had that. I've never had a thing where I wanted to harm myself. But I have had the state very many times about just wanting to be off of this deal. Just get me the fuck out of here. Okay, uncle, I'm not pissed off. Other people figured it out. I didn't. That's okay. Fine. Just get me out of here. I would go to bed and I would just go, please just take me out of this thing. And then I wake up and then I go to work. That's a thing where that was the thing. My go-to is just get me out of here. Get me out of here. Well, what I'm finding now, so yeah, the get me out of here is I don't want the, I don't want to have vengeance. I did want vengeance when I was younger, but that's what young guys do. Young guys want to, you know, destroy the world. I did. I don't now. I just wanted to get out. But because I realized what I wanted ultimately was just a reset. I just want the reset, man. Just put, take me out, bring me back, give me the non-alcoholic family, whatever. Just give me that reset. Well, what I'm starting to realize, not even start to realize, am in the state of, is that this work, this is the reset. This is the reset I get to have every day, every week, going forward. So now it's such an interesting complete reversal of feeling, where now it's like, no, I don't want to be off of this thing. I want to be here for as long as I can and leave it all on the field. I want to keep doing it, keep digging into it, keep acknowledging my part, keep letting the fog go, keep letting go of the things that don't help me and don't help others. Because that's another aspect of the work that I have found, is this isn't a getting program. It's a letting go program. This is how I achieve serenity in my life, is by letting go of those things that are not helpful to me and to others. That's I find it miraculous. A person shared on, I go to a meeting on Sunday, and this person shared and spoke about how they were feeling the change inside and how outside life doesn't seem that much different, but inside it feels different. And I remember when I first came to meetings, this meeting in particular, I first came to this meeting and guys were saying, oh yeah, my life is so much different now. And I'd be like, oh yeah, I'll bet it's different. I was just like, it just wasn't having that as a statement because I had no understanding of it. Now, not only do I have the understanding of it, I have that experience. And you couldn't have convinced me that was going to be real all that time ago, because that's what I'm having. The interior feeling is different. The experience is different. My physical life, not that much different, but that does not matter, because the interior feeling moving forward is what I want, you know, and it's what I'm building, you know. I'm doing this thing now. It's just a practice that I'm doing. It's not a program practice, but it's this thing where I will be out somewhere and I will look at a thing. I will look at something. I'm driving. I don't care where it is. I'll just be looking and I'll look at the thing and I will just really let it be myself, let myself be with it. And I will say, that is the most beautiful thing I have ever seen. And it is at that moment. And then later on, same day, next day, I'll do it again. And I'll look at another thing and I'll say, that is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And it is. And I'm building on this sense of beauty, expanding the sense of beauty. And it's amazing how it helps me move outward into the world and move outward from my interior. And I relate it all to this, you know, to being able to choose my happiness, choose what I am is going to be useful to me, and appreciating beauty in all of its forms is incredibly useful to me. Yeah, I'm really grateful to be here. Just knowing that, you know, with my family, you know, I have a dear brother and sister who I adore, and I had an older brother who died many years ago, and he died drunk. So he didn't make it. And some years ago, I was in Seattle with my brother and sister, and my brother had suggested that we go down to, there was a part of South Seattle where we had lived for a while. And he had made the, hey, we should go down in the area down there, see where the house was. And my sister was like, I don't think that's a very good idea. That wasn't very nice down there. And it wasn't nice because that was a really difficult time for our family, you know. So we went down there, we're looking around, looking at the houses, and it was kind of ratty and, you know, not the nicest neighborhood and all that. And I remember how all of us were, I mean, myself included, we were all kind of on the edge of just sliding off, you know, no place to be caught by. And And like I said, my brother, he didn't make it, you know, and the rest of us, we got out of it, but boy, it was pretty slim there for a little while. But again, I had no idea. I just normalized everything. I thought, oh, this is how everybody lives. And it isn't, you know. Funnily too, I love this part. So while I was living in Seattle, I lived in Seattle many years ago. What I just spoke about was visiting a couple years ago, but I lived in Seattle a long time ago. And I used to work for this company where we were doing commercials and art stuff, commercials. And there was a guy who I loved this guy. This guy was a painter, really talented guy, super funny. And one morning before work, we were there and, he was out in his truck and he was reading this little book and he's kind of thinking, he's kind of, you know, reading again. And I was kind of looking out there, what's he doing out there? And so later I said, hey, I saw you out there in the morning. You were like, reading, what are you doing out there? And he goes, oh, I'm actually in a 12-step program. I'm in this thing called Al-Anon. And I said, what, are you an alcoholic? And he goes, no, Al-Anon is for people who are affected by people who are alcoholics or alcoholism. And I said, oh, really? And he goes, yeah, my wife's an alcoholic. And, you know, I have to, you know, be part of this. And when he said that, that is bullshit, man. You got to divorce her, man. That is crap. And I just went to his defense, you know, salivating, all pissed off. And he's like, easy, man. Don't worry. And it went to his defense that he didn't need. And he's like, it's okay. Don't worry about it. But the amazing thing, so I was 27 when that happened. And I had there was nothing there to even tickle me a little bit to say, this might be something you would need. Nothing. And I think now it's amazing to me that it was introduced to me all that time ago. And I had there wasn't a crack that thing could get into for me. And so obviously I'm so grateful to be here after all that time. And when I see people in the meeting who are young, you know, in their 20s and 30s, I just go, oh man, you won the lottery. Congratulations. Welcome. you are doing it. You're doing a good thing. Where are we? It's pretty good. Doing all right. Okay. I want to talk about something. I want to talk about a series of events that happened for me in this fellowship, in the program. Something that happened that I've spoken about a little bit in meetings, but not too much. But I want to get into it a little bit. I want to share my experience about it. I had a thing happen. It was 2 years ago now. I guess about 2 years ago. So I was friends with a fellow, had become friends with a fellow in a room, talking to the fellow, had done some socializing with the fellow outside of the room, phone chats, doing a couple things, social outside, a very nice friendship, just purely friendship, really terrific. One time the fellow and I were on the phone and we were having a phone chat, talking about various things, all kinds of things we would talk about. And at some point I said something and I did not know at the time, but I deeply offended this fellow. And at the time of the chat, nothing was said, just da, 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 okay. And then I'll talk to you later, blah, blah, blah. And then the next day I was thinking about it. I go, man, because I've got kind of a big mouth. I can just kind of shoot my mouth off. And I thought, did I offend this fellow? And I was like, well, I don't know, but I didn't feel like, oh, I better call and check. So if I did, I'll clean it up. I can totally clean that up. Not a problem. And seriously, like a couple hours later, the fellow texted me and said, you know, what you said to me, I found incredibly offensive. You know, I don't want to even have that kind of conversation with you. And I was just like, oh shit. Oh my God. I just was mortified. You know, it was very, very just like, oh my, I did not want to do that. And the fellow also said, I want no contact with you. So I was like, oh shit. So I called my sponsor and I said, look, man, this thing happened. Da, da, da. The person has said no contact. What do? I feel like I want to reach out in some way. And he said, You can send one brief text, but that's it. And then just leave it. I was like, okay. So I wrote the text, sent the text, nothing. Okay. I hope I will be able to talk to this person and sort it all out. Then, though, what began to happen is the fellow started to share about this conversation in meetings and personally identified me and started to speak about me specifically in meetings, which, as we know, is not what we do. But then it started to magnify further by other fellows hearing these shares and then personally acting out against me. Okay. One fellow who was responsible for getting speakers for a meeting, I was meant to lead a meeting, and this fellow uninvited me because they had taken a position and decided that I was not welcome. Another fellow approached me at a meeting and said that I should not attend that meeting because my presence was upsetting to others. Another fellow gossiped that since I had been a secretary of a fairly large meeting, and since I had offended this fellow, that I had in fact abused my power as secretary, which I find kind of interesting since I do remember having the power to take the key and open the door, right? I had the power to take the notebook and read the format. I did have that power, but no other power that I was aware of. So all of these things started to magnify and get back to me. And back to the issue of trust, I found it very, very difficult and very painful because, frankly, a trust had been broken. A trust to maintain the principles of the program had been thrown out and me with it. And it was really, really difficult for me. And partly because one of the great lessons that I have in life, one of the things that teaches me the greatest is if I hurt someone inadvertently, somebody I really care about, that's like a dagger to my chest. And I can think of maybe four or five times in life that I have done that. And I've never repeated those specific kinds of mistakes, never repeated them, because it's massively painful for me to hurt somebody that I like. So the point of all that really is, I think about, well, firstly, I did have some really fine guidance from fellows, from my sponsor, or from other fellows once I started to talk and share about what was going on. My sponsor and fellows were really, they were fantastic at helping me navigate this while maintaining the principles, while staying in the steps, not jumping to my defense, but to help me get to my part and to stay on course with the principles of the program. And to that, I am so grateful because they helped me get through it and understand what I had to understand from doing it, right? One of the things I understood, so I mentioned other people doing things, acting against the principles. Those are things that I do really well. If I hear of a friend who's been offended, I'm like, fuck that. Who said that to you? I get one piece of information and I go crazy. I know how to do that. And having that done to me really was a fantastic lesson to remind me of how not to be. Because I found in life that people can give you lessons on how not to be. And those are equally important as examples of how to act. So that helps me remember. If I get all lit up and I'm ready to rumble, it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Wait, what happened? Just to ask questions, just to slow down, to listen to whomever, but just slow it all down and stay within those principles, because those principles matter. The principles of this program are why it is what it is. If we dump those principles, this thing falls apart in 5 seconds and it becomes another shitty clubhouse like out there. And I've had to ask myself, what do I want from this program? What do I want it to be? Who do I want to be in it? And what I want is to be obedient to what is unenforceable. And that is the traditions, the principles of the program. They work. And that's why we can stay together and do what we do. I offered an amends and it was rejected. I remain poised to give it should those circumstances change, and I hope they will. In the meantime, though, I will continue with my living amends, which is, and this is a very important lesson I got from all this. You know, we come to these meetings and we reveal ourselves, we talk about our past, our details, and I know who that person is. I don't know who that person is. Just because I have those interior details, that is a false sense of intimacy. It's a false sense of knowing who that person is. So my amends is to just slow the fuck down. Slow down. Check it out. Don't go shooting off my mouth, because I can. I can just shoot my mouth off. And I need to just slow down, know that I'm dealing with somebody that I do not know. Because the fact is, I did say something that if I offended this person, I did do it. I didn't mean to, but I did. Now, the news around that is that, how do I say, okay, so there's another fellow who I really cherish. This fellow spoke once in a meeting about how they can have 20 people giving them all the praise, but one person will start to go negative on them, and they're like open for business. Like, because the belief is, you're right, I do suck. All these other people who think I'm good, they just don't know me. I am awful. And that's been my history as well. One of the great things through this event, though, was realizing by taking my part and saying, yes, I offended this fellow. I know what I did, but I also know what I didn't do. I did not do things that have been said. And I know that. And sometimes, man, you're the only person on earth who knows the truth, and that's really okay, you know? So I'm really glad to have that too, because I can no longer be talked into, oh, I actually am the person upon all the sins of the world have to be carried. I am the guy who's got to apologize forever. I'm not that guy, and I'm not that guy anymore, you know? And that's what a gift, you know, what a gift. And to my fellows, frankly, all those fellows out there acting in whatever manners they were acting, you know, they're still my fellows, you know, and I still wish them well, and I wish them sound and deep recovery. And I wish for them that when this kind of thing comes up again, that they will be able to deal with it in more clarity and to be able to use the program, because that's really what it's for. And for myself, too. I want that for myself, to always use the program, particularly when I get lit up for justice or lit up for, you know, I've got to defend something. That's the time I need to slow down and use this. But I can, because I have it, and I have all of you to bounce it off of. I just wanted to share that, because that's been a huge part of my growth in this last couple of years. I want to share it just to tell it. I also want to share it for newcomers. Please don't be afraid. Don't be afraid that the fellowship is crazy, because it isn't. These people here are wonderful, and the program is sound. It's just that sometimes people do get off track, myself included. Okay. One fellow, I was speaking to this fellow about this situation. This fellow said to me that they thought they might have quit the program if that had happened to them. I'm really lucky to say that I didn't think about quitting the program for one second. And that's because I know the program is sound. The program is sound. It's people who get lost, you know, so I'm glad to have that. I also share it too for anyone in anyone here. If you should ever find yourself in a position where you make a mistake with a fellow and it magnifies out of control and you feel like people are cutting you loose or whatever, and you don't know where to go, you call me, okay? I will listen to you. I will help you with that one, because I've been through it. So I offer that to you. And just a reminder, the caution of the assumed intimacy, beware of that one. Okay. Oh, man. So, yeah, I'm glad to get into detail with that experience because it's been a big one. What else? Where are we? Was that 10 minutes left? 15? All right. When did we start? Wait, 20? I think it's 10 minutes. Yeah. Okay.
You have until 8:25. So you got
what? Oh, dude, let's get into it, bro. Okay. So I was watching this Netflix show. No, I don't know. Jeez. Yeah, I mean, I want to go back a minute to the. I want to go back to a minute for the again, just this thing about wanting to be off the earth, you know, the thing about just wanting to be off the earth and wanting the reset and just coming into the state of knowing that this is the reset. And this is something that it sounds so corny because people say it. And when I first hear these kinds of things, it's always an eye roll, but this is something I get to do. I get to do this. I get to create my reset through the guidance of this work. And what's amazing about the 12 steps, and this is a thing that when I'd had various spiritual things. But once I got into the 12 steps and really started reading them, I realized, oh, these things are poetic in essence. And what I mean by that is that there's no extra words. It's all been sifted down to its bare minimum wording. And the way of thing, you know, we came to believe, the past tense of things, it's a we program, not an I program. And just how the steps themselves are so poetic, and how when you do them and allow the results to grow, a change happens that is kind of beyond, I don't really understand how it works, but I know that it works. And that's the great testament that I just want to share that with the whole world. You know, there are people, I talk to them and I get to know them a little bit and I see what they're doing and I go, and I don't say it, but inside I'm going, oh man, you could use it. Oh no. You know, I don't, but boy, just because, and not because I think I have the answer, but because I'm having an experience that I find difficult to almost believe, you know, it's just like, wow, this thing, it works. It just really works. And makes me very happy to just be not just doing it, but to have come from going to bed, wanting to be beamed up to the Enterprise versus going, no, I want tomorrow. And I want the day after tomorrow. I want that day. And I want the next day. And I want to keep doing it. Building it, building the beauty state, like I was talking about earlier, you know. I've also found something really remarkable that in I was talking about earlier about the, it's not a getting process, it's a letting go process, that there's something also where I'm stopped. I wouldn't say stopped entirely, but I'm not really looking for meanings in things anymore. It's like, do this. Oh, this means that. It's like, I'm not really looking for that in things. I'm not really even looking for meanings on the inside of myself. I just go, you know, I'm not really interested. I'm not really interested in looking for meanings in things because I have found that all my meanings prior really had to do with my upbringing in alcoholism and addiction and incest, these things. And my sponsor, my wonderful sponsor, said this to me once because early on when I would be fighting with my girlfriend and I'd be outside calling him, I'm just like, oh, Jesus, what the... Da, da. And I said, da, 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 and I'd say this thing, that's not who I am, and this is who I am. And he would just go, you know, one thing I'm just going to tell you, and we'll talk about this over time. We'll keep getting into this. But just try to realize that all these things that you say you are, that you believe you are, they were all shaped by growing up in alcoholism and addiction. So you might find as time goes on that those things aren't actually what you are at all. I go, what do you tell you? You know, it's like, no, it's not. It's like, yeah, I know. But just consider it. It's like, okay. So as time has gone on, not only have I considered it, I found it to be correct. Those aren't necessarily, quote, who I am. All of these things that I've held on to so tightly for so long. So a great, great realization. And just the pitch for sponsorship, you know, having my two sponsors here, you know, these guys just, you know, helped me. I can't imagine doing this without sponsorship. You know, I really can't. Because to be able to talk to people in meetings and be frank is, of course, fantastic. But being one-on-one with the person that you can reveal all that stuff to is instrumental to success. And again, it comes back to trust, back to the trust word. To be able to trust these guys with my interior is a huge accomplishment and a huge benefit. I would say the benefit, a real gift, to be able to say whatever I need to say to my sponsor. You know, that's really, really important, because I couldn't do that growing up. I had nowhere to go. I couldn't go to my dad. I couldn't go to my mom. I couldn't tell them things. I couldn't tell them anything. You know, so to have this where I can go to the true confidant, you know, I'm lucky where I do have that with my brother and my sister. I'm really lucky in that manner. And I hear people often say, oh, you know, I hear people in meetings talk about not having strong relationships with their siblings. And I just go, oh, man, I would be heartbroken if I didn't have that. So I'm lucky to have that. But I also do really, I speak strongly on sponsorship. It's crucial. Interestingly, I find too that these days, it's like the stuff is still there, the things I still have to deal with. You know, I can still get into kind of a fog state or a state where I'm kind of like, oh, I don't quite know what to do with myself. If I don't have a big list of things to accomplish, I might kind of be in this state of, I don't really, what do I do? It's kind of fog thing. But it used to be, the way I used to approach it is I would just go, well, come on, get squared away. And it would be like this kind of harsh version of doing it. But that also is changing. That is now changed to where I can just go, well, it's okay, man. Let's just get into it. And one of the things I tell myself that now has meaning that didn't used to have meaning is don't be afraid of it. It's okay. Don't be afraid of it. Let's just get into it. We can just get into it. Don't be afraid of it. And what's amazing is that that side of my personality, that side of my wisdom is the loving dad I never grew up with. And even there's, you know, the fake it till you make it part. And there would be times earlier in the program, I would do that. I would say, yeah, it's okay. You know, da, da, da. But it didn't feel real. It didn't feel like that's the caring part of myself. I was faking it till I made it, really. But now it's moved into a state to where, oh man, yeah, man, thanks, Dad. You know, thanks, Pop. It's what it feels like. And it feels like I am present in that manner to soften the path, to make things easy, to not trip over stuff. Or if I do, I'm there to just go, hey, man, you okay? All right, no, don't worry about it. Don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of it. And the sound of that voice to my own ears has a ring to it that it's never had. Amazing. Amazing. I just came, you know, I don't know if I can fully express how amazed I am by the transformation, particularly considering that, you know, geez, let's see. So I guess I was 50 when I first came in, something like that, 49. You know, it's like all of those years with this kind of crazy ass trying to cope with all of this stuff and the stuff that happened, and then to be able to turn it around, to put the alchemy to it, and that it can transform as quickly as it has, that is remarkable to me. I think I'll tell this story. This is a great story that helps identify some of the stuff. So there was a time until, let's see, I was 15. I was like 15 years old. I was living in Colorado at the time. My family was going to be moving to Washington. At that time in Colorado, they had a thing, a year-round school system. It was a way they could, you know, keep kids in school without having to build new schools. So 2/3 of the kids were in school at any time, right? So it turned out that the way the school year went, I still had one more quarter of school to do so I could graduate. See, was I going to be, yeah, graduate my sophomore year of high school. Okay, so I had one more quarter of school, but my family was going. And the quarter was like, I guess, during the summer, like May to August or whatever. It worked out that I was able to, one of my good friends, his family was willing to keep me for the quarter. They were willing to let me stay with them. You know, my family was going to, you know, give them money, and then I was just going to stay and go to school, and then I would go up to Seattle afterward. And, you know, my mother, God bless her, my mom just died about a year ago, so I speak with love for her. At that time, she said to me, well, you know, one thing you could do, you could come up with this and do your sophomore year over again. And it was just like, what? I mean, just that my mom would choose that as an option, I was just like, can we do something else, please? You know, so it worked out. I was able to stay with my friend. I want to say something about that just quickly. So that thing with my mom saying that, it was more kind of insult to injury, because at that time I felt like this is what my parents thought of me. This is the way they would say things like that. And they go, so this must be who I am. This is what they think of me. Anyway, so I went and I stayed with my good friend and stayed with her family, and they were great. You know, this guy was in my class. His older brother was there. His parents were really solid. They were lovely people, and they really took me in. And it was really interesting because for the first time in my life, I really felt like I was one of their cubs. I felt like I was part of their family, and I had never felt like that, just the way they were. You know, they would talk to me and including me dinner together, all these things, and they were just really, really lovely with me. So I'd go to school, and then I'd go and put on my Der Wiener Schnitzel outfit and go work at Der Wiener Schnitzel in the evenings. So one day, I guess I was maybe, I don't know, 6 weeks in or something like that, the mom, she sat me down and she said, I need to talk to you for a second. I don't know what's going on with your family, but your family hasn't sent us any money. I don't know what's going on. I tried calling. I couldn't get through to anybody. But, you know, we can't have you without that. You know, this was part of the agreement. We need to have that. And it was one of those things where, man, at that time, I can remember it right now, even as I describe it, the heat that built up in my chest and just went into my head. I must have looked just like a red balloon or something, because I was just mortified. I was just abject humiliation for myself, for my family. It was just the worst type of thing, right? So I don't remember even, honestly, I don't even remember how it got sorted out. I do remember just taking my Der Wiener Schnitzel money and giving it to them so that it was taken care of, you know. And the great thing is that they were really sweet to me. They were really nice to me. She never made me feel bad about it. The dad never did, nothing like that. They were just really lovely, but it was really, really awful. And the thing that was so difficult about that, really, and my ex actually said this to me one time, we were talking about it, and she said, God, the toughest part about that is that you being 15, you know, and just that's a time when a young man is meant to be sort of preparing for his adulthood. You know, the parents, you know, helping you sort of think about what are you going to go to college or, you know, and then to have that happen, it's like at that time, I almost would have wished, not that I wished my parents dead, but I wished it would have been like they died and couldn't take care of me, but that they were up there and no one was caring. It was really, really tough. And these are the kinds of events that shaped who I thought I was, right? And, you know, we get into the thing about they did the best they could. You know, that's one of the things we talk about in the program. And I remember when I was first working with my sponsor on this and talking about this thing. And I was just like, man, I can't really get part of the best they could. I go, that's not the best. It's just that and other things, you know, terrorizing the kids, all of this shit. It's like, I don't give a fuck, man. That is not the best you can do as a grown up. And my sponsor, again, this is one of the great phrases, the one of the phrases that will stick with me until the end, one that I will be happy to share with anyone. He said to me, acceptance is not approval. Okay, I can do that. I can accept it and not approve of it. That I can do. And what's interesting about it is that as I am now, I look at that and I go, they did do the best they could do. I can see that now. And that's developing compassion for them in a way that was not available to me before, because I was too busy in the role of who I thought I was, this role that I was trying to defend against, you know, being in judgment of myself and of them. There was no way, if all those things are in the way, compassion, there's no room for compassion. There just isn't, you know? So to be able to get to that state is another miracle of the program. You know, really, really, really powerful. And I never really did find out what happened with all that, but it doesn't matter at this point because the understandings are there. Very, very important of that. Also, too, I'm glad to say that, you know, they took me in then. And fortunately, I've been able to, I've been able to extend that to others in life. There've been some times I've been able to help others. They can stay with me, and I've been able to pass that on in a way. And I'm really glad to have been able to do that, because that was something I didn't feel like I owed it to anybody, but I felt like I wanted to do it because someone had done it for me. Grateful for that. What else? Goodness gracious. I think one of the things too, I was talking a little bit earlier about the, still I can kind of move into fog sometimes. And one of the things I've learned and developed is I can sort of measure it by how I'm doing. There are a few things I can measure in a how I'm doing way that will kind of indicate what I need to do as far as, do I need to take an inventory? Do I need to do a reach out? So one of those things is, how do I react? If something comes up that triggers me, how do I react, like as hard? Oh, is it? Or can I just go, whoa, having a reaction here? Let me just slow down a second. That's a great indication of how I'm doing in all of this. And another one, and this is a crucial one, I find, especially having to do with kind of feeling adrift sometimes, is how am I when it's quiet and I'm alone? How am I in that state? It's a great measure of where I'm at. And one of the great things I'm happy to report is I've always liked alone time. I've been an isolator by Al-Anon standards for sure. But even not an isolator, I like a lot of alone time. I like doing things by myself. But even then, there are times when it's not scary, but it's edgy, you know, edgy to be alone. And as time goes on, man, the quiet and alone time, to be able to sit with that and go, yes, indeed. It's great. It's great. But I find that as a good measure, because if I'm not doing well when it's quiet and alone, that's a place where I know, okay, that's a place where something's going on that I can check in. I'm making something happen here that I'm aware of. So what is it that I'm making here? So I can dig into it from that level. Good measures. But again, man, just these things of being able to participate, that comes back to my part again. Participate in all the aspects of my life, not just what's my part with you or what's my part with work, but what's my part with my own creations? What is my part? What am I doing? You know, to be able to get into that and to be in it in a way that is, I don't want to exaggerate, but 100 times more easy than it was when I first came in here is fantastic. You know, it just, miraculous. And I look forward to the next time I'm in a relationship to be able to work these things in a more deliberate manner, you know, and to really, again, the big work would be, I know mine, it would be the don't do the lie by omission. Don't say it's okay if you're not okay. You know, don't say, yeah, I don't need anything. Just don't do that anymore, you know. But I'm sure I'll have interesting opportunities on that front. Let's see where else. Lie by omission, my favorites. Yeah, I think too, back to when I was talking about the event of dealing with the fellows and that whole business, and just that whole thing was really important as well, just to realize that part of my deal was thinking that, everyone's got to be on my side. You know, everyone has got to think that I'm at least okay. That's not true either. That's just not true. And particularly when it comes to speaking the truth of things, I know that my lie by omission tendency is more about wanting to make sure that, or doing my best to see that everybody at least thinks I'm okay, you know, not wanting anybody to not like me. Because in truth, my style on the inside, I'll just say it as it is. I want to know it like it is. Just tell me so I can deal with it. Don't lie by omission. Don't just tell me. What, there's a comet heading right from, a meteor heading right for my house? When is it getting here? You know, that's what I want. That's what I want. It's how I like to do it. And yet that lie by omission thing is really just about me wanting to, you know, please others, people please. But again, and I love this phrase, I've heard this many times in these rooms, when you stop pleasing people, people stop being pleased. And there you go, you know. But that's a great thing. That's a great thing. And it's great to get to the state, once again, I knew it didn't matter, but I kept acting like it did matter to have people like me. So to go from here where I know it doesn't matter to it doesn't matter, great. You know, more progress of the program. So what else? I'm on the eighth step. 8 years, 8 steps. I thought it was going to be, you know, 12 steps, 12 months. No. Eighth step. The steps have all been fantastic. You know, each one, it's plain to me that they are in order for a reason, you know, because one builds on the next and builds on the next. See, where are we? 20 after. What else? Man, I should have made more notes. Goodness. Here's another great one. No, this is a great one. So I mentioned earlier about that I've done lots of spiritual seeking in life and various things. I was raised Catholic, you know, I was a born again Christian for a while in high school. I was a Buddhist. I studied with a Native American teacher for 5 years up in the Northwest. Lots of different things that I did. But each one of them, ultimately, I left. And it wasn't because I won't say I don't have judgments about certain aspects of some of those pursuits, because I do. But that's not why I left them ultimately. The reason I left any of that stuff is because I found that if I was going to do this thing, it was more about just kind of like getting high with spirituality. But what there was still a nagging pain on the inside. It was that God-shaped hole. And for me, the God-shaped hole actually hurts. It's not just something where there's a hole that you try to fill things up with. It's a painful state where I'm constantly just trying to keep my head above water. And what I found with the 12 steps is that the 12 steps is actually a guide for living. And that's the fundamental difference between it and all the other things that I did. The other things I could go, oh yeah, I've got these, you know, spiritual, whatever. but there wasn't a practice that I could do that would help the interior of my soul, you know, and that means something to me. And that's something that I have found here, you know, so that's why, again, I'm a huge proponent of the 12 steps. I think every human being should work the 12 steps, anyway, but that's a great thing to know. And it helps me respect what I had done before as well, you know, because those things have their benefits as well. Other spiritual pursuits all have their benefits. But I found that what I ultimately needed and what I have ultimately gotten the most growth and benefit from is the guide for living, you know, doing the things that are going to help me mend, repair, strengthen, and expand this little deal right here, whatever this is, you know. And it's great because I also found what I was talking about earlier with the beauty exercise. This is the most beautiful thing. That is the most beautiful thing. I find that, you know, we talk about, you know, the heaven or, you know, heaven or going to up and below the heaven and hell. It's really, for me, it's not even that. It's not that. And with the beauty exercise, what I'm finding is it's about the out versus the in, but it's a spherical outward. It's a spherical outward. And, the energy is the more I just do that and focus on just do an action and let go of that outcome, that thing can go. I don't have to stop it with my judgments and my particular defenses and that kind of stuff, you know. So I think I will actually. I got my books here. I love this part, this fantastic book, From Survival to Recovery. It's one of my favorite books that we have. I love this part. This is a part that is always, when I first heard it, I was very moved by it, and I continue to be moved by it. Where is that? 259. Part that says no. How did I lose it? Well, it's the part that says, with dignity, I will stand for myself without standing against others. And that one sentence is, I find, very instrumental to my, not only my recovery, but kind of what I say is my, I don't want to say like a mission in life in a way, because for so much of my life, I have felt like in order to stand for myself, I've got to go against you. And that's not correct, you know, and to be able to have the experience of going, standing for myself while not standing against others is remarkable. Not only be able to stand for myself and offer a hand to others, you know, these are big things for me, you know, and a lot of this stuff, I'm sure, like when I hear these things spoken by others, I can go, yeah, I get it intellectually. I can understand it, but to be able to speak it from an experiential internal perspective outward is a huge thing. It's a huge thing that I almost don't really have words to express what that feels like, but it is remarkable. And it is this, and it's all of you. And how are we for time? What do you think, Eric?
You got a minute.
1 minute. 1 minute. All right. Well, I hope that I've said any one thing that's been helpful to you. Again, that's what I hope for. I'm so happy. I just can say that I am so happy to have found the 12 steps. I'm so happy to have found this fellowship. And I give great care and respect and love to this meeting and to you men. Your faces, I have not seen you for a while, but I know you and I remember you well, all of you. And I miss the big room. And I'm so thankful to all of you and the entire fellowship for all the care and support and all the continued work you do to keep the program going in your life, and the peace that you create in your lives is meaningful, you know, as is the peace that I'm creating in mine. So I think with that, I will sign off. I thank you all so much. Thank you. I'm honored to be here tonight. Jack asked if I was conducting tonight. I'm just conducting my own life via my best practices. Happy to see all of you guys. Thank you for everything. I love you. Thanks so much.